Hi guys, and welcome back to episode 3 of The Middle Game with Lula and Amelia. Today we are going to talk about the new BBC show Chess Masters The Endgame a little bit.
Yes.
And I believe also Amelia has some spicy chess gossip that we'll get to later.
Yes, I do. But today we're going to start off with an exclusive interview with the chess princess herself, Lula Robs. So excited to have you on the show as my co-host.
So excited to get this as an interview.
This coveted exclusive interview. Lula, that's so fun. I haven't watched episode 2 yet, but I did watch episode 1. I loved it. I thought it was really great. I think that they did a really good job at making chess like accessible to a new audience. I think with TV shows, you know, you have to understand that they're produced like for a specific audience. And I think they did a really good job. The filming location was like super nice. And
it was
super beautiful. But can you tell me a little bit about the show and what it's about? And like, you can't get into like too many specifics, but what it was like being on the show?
Yeah, so basically, for those of you who don't know what the show is, it is a new reality TV show on BBC about chess and chess players. It's a competition, so every week somebody gets knocked out, and the way that this is done is through a series of chess challenges. So these can be games, these can be puzzles, and like basically it varies every week. It's really exciting to watch it back. When we were filming, it felt obviously very different to anything I've ever done before because I've never been on TV. But like you said, the venue was beautiful, and it was actually just very nice to be with a bunch of other chess players that I'd never met before from all different backgrounds as well. Also, like, I know that they're very short shows. They're only 30 minutes each, and there's a lot packed into that time. At the time, it felt like we were doing a lot of chess. I know that some people have said that it doesn't feel like there's enough chess in the show, but at the time when we were making the show, it felt like there was a lot of chess.
Really? Yeah, I thought it was really interesting the way that obviously you guys played speed chess, but then as well, like those who were eliminated had to do puzzles. And it, when they said puzzles, I was really thinking like mate in three, but it was like these very interesting puzzles where you had to, I think the first one was like you had to capture all the pawns with the bishop. And I was like, interesting, like that's fun and quirky. And so when you think about the show, are you happy with it? Like, what feedback have you gotten on the show?
So I know that the show has had mixed reviews in like the wider media, but I've only had positive responses. Like in my replies and my DM requests, everyone has just been talking about how much they enjoyed watching it. So that's very positive for me, of course. Honestly, being like a content creator, and every time I do something in chess, it seems controversial. So I was expecting there to be a lot of hate and a lot of negativity towards me specifically, because that just somehow always happens. I have had like no negativity. Which has been so nice. And it has been like the nicest, happiest surprise that I've ever had in my life, that I've only been receiving positive comments. Or honestly, I haven't received that many comments from people who don't already know who I am, because for anyone else, I'm just another contestant on the show. And that's really nice too, because it means that they have no reason to single me out. Whereas in chess, when people know like I'm a content creator and stuff like this, some people in chess are actually quite anti-content creator. And so they, you know, don't really like when content creators are doing stuff. With regards to the puzzles and the bishop puzzle that you referenced, episode 2 had another puzzle where you have to try and put 8 queens on the board without them attacking each other. And I totally agree with you that I was expecting to go on the show and to have like normal puzzles if there were going to be puzzles, like mate in 2 or mate in 3 or whatever, like just a chess puzzle that you would get on chess.com. But actually, I think the way that they've done it was perfect for the fact that it's going on television, because for those who are watching it, the majority of people who are turning on their TV on a Monday night are not going to be chess players, because the majority of the general public are not chess players. So the great thing about the bishop puzzle or the queen puzzle is it requires zero chess knowledge other than knowing how the piece moves, which is explained at the beginning of the puzzle. So if you can kind of complete this challenge without being a chess player, this is like a fun little entryway into, oh, maybe I would actually want to play chess because you've solved this puzzle. And so actually, I think it was perfectly done for TV in that way.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And is it true? Because I remember in the episode, they were like, David Howell, like, came up with this puzzle. Is that true? Like, that he did come up with it? Or is this something that like was kind of collaborative. Not that I don't think he could come up with this kind of thing, but I think it's more like this is something that I think David is very good at, in that he, as a commentator, is very good at bridging the gap between like those who don't play chess and those who do play chess, and kind of expect like a high level of analysis. So I don't know if you can answer that question, but.
Personally, I don't know how much creative control David had, but I do know, and you can, like, this is public knowledge because it's in the credits of the show. We had chess consultants. So if you watch the show and you watch the credits, you can see people named as the chess consultants on the show. And so there were people specifically on set to make sure that the chess happened and, like, to do all of the rules. And so, like, in that way, David was not tasked with the arbiter role, if you see what I mean.
Okay, yeah.
Because, like, basically, I'm not really allowed to talk about, like, the makings of the show, but there are, like, for every show, there's a huge team working behind the scenes that you don't see. And I did see some comments, like, in general on Google about, like, did they even have an arbiter? Why are they not using touch move? This kind of thing. And it's just crazy to me that people don't think, like, they don't think that this was thought through. And of course it was thought through. The show decided that we were going to use clock move, so you don't have to abide by touch move rules. And, like, of course all of this stuff has to be planned and has to be figured out. And it seems like the general public, when they're watching something that's produced, they forget about all the behind the scenes, which I guess is good. You need to be able to do that to fully enjoy watching television. But of course, Amelia, you know from working on, like, films, that there's such a huge team behind every project.
Absolutely. That's what I personally like really love about TV and a film, is that it is a huge collaborative like effort. But that's really, really cool. Was it weird like getting to talk during your game? Because normally during chess games you don't get to talk, but I noticed that you guys were allowed to speak. So also, by the way, I loved your opponent in the first episode. He was so funny.
I love Nick. Oh my gosh. I played against Nick in episode one. And I mean, we had all just met. So I was quite nervous because actually, when I meet people for the first time, I can be quite shy. And Nick was so just, like, warm and kind and generous. And he was, like, trying to, like, bring me, I felt like he was trying to bring me out of my shell. He did call me, like, the ice queen or something, because I wasn't saying anything. But it was, like, all in good fun. And he was honestly so great to be paired against, because I feel like we were able to, like, have a little bonding moment. I know that we were competitors and we were contestants, but I think that what people don't realize about chess is, like, once the game ends, you and your opponent are no longer enemies. Like, that's how it's different from other game shows where people get voted off or where they lose challenges and they get kicked off the show. Like, in chess, it's the same in chess tournaments. After your game, you and your opponent are not enemies. You'll go and analyze the game together. Sometimes you'll even get a drink together. Like, this is very normal for chess players, and you have to be able to switch your mentality from I need to crush this person in the game to, like, we are no longer hostile at all. And so actually, I completely loved playing against Nick, and I was so sad to see him go in episode one.
Yeah, I also was quite sad. That's so great. I'm really excited to see the future episodes. I personally have a very busy, I'm doing exams this week, and so I'm kind of like dying. But I once I'm kind of on break, I will be on it with my episodes, catching up, binging it. So yeah, if you were gonna make your own chess TV show, do you think that you would make it similar to this one, or would you make it different? Like, what would your vision be?
I think as a chess content creator, probably I've already thought about this. Like, a long time ago, when I was still living in Jersey, I had some friends who didn't play chess at all, but they were really interested in what I was doing. And I basically wanted to start this, this show that was inspired by PogChamps, but wasn't PogChamps, where I, like, essentially trained up all of my friends who didn't know how to play chess, and then they got to play against each other. And this would have obviously been different to PogChamps, because first of all, none of them had, like, a base level of chess, whereas on PogChamps they do already know usually how the pieces move and stuff like this. And also, I'm not a grandmaster, so it would have looked very different. And that's something that was, like, a brief idea and would have been really fun. But then I moved and all of this stuff happened, so it never ended up materializing. But I do kind of love that story that we get when we see people improving. However, I'm not sure how this would work on actual TV. And so like I was planning to do that via like a YouTube series or something, because you have no limit to a YouTube series, whereas TV, you have like an allotted time slot, you have a number of episodes that you have to stick to. And so you really only have so much time to film. And so I think actually they did it very well for how much time we had to fill, and it feels dynamic, and it feels like each challenge of the three challenges is given its amount of time.
Yeah, I definitely think that for me, if I was going to make a chess TV show, because one little critique that I have, not of you, but of the show in general, is I think what makes a TV show successful, and obviously this depends on the type of TV show. So for this is a game show. And so the objectives are different. The audience is different. But for me, I really like TV shows where they allow you kind of before the competition starts to get emotionally attached, like to the person that you are like watching or playing against or whatever. And so I do wish that they would have done a bit more of like intro on each contestant, just a bit more than they did. But other than that, I think the show really was well executed, well produced, and it's so cool that you're on the BBC. Like, that's so fun.
No, I totally agree in that I kind of, because obviously I haven't seen the show, right? I'm just watching it at the same time as everybody else. And I was also expecting us to all kind of have a little backstory that they would show on the first episode so that you could kind of get connected to each person. But it seems like they're doing this kind of like very like bit by bit. In like every episode, you learn a bit more about each person. And I think that, like, this is just conjecture, but I think it's probably because it's only a 30-minute slot. If they had, like, 45 minutes or an hour, then I think you would definitely have had time to have done an introduction on everybody. But I agree. I would have quite liked that as well. Even though I met everybody and I know them all personally, I would have liked to have seen that too, because it creates, like, characters that you can root for and you have more story building in that way. And I think that with my friends who I watched it with, none of whom are chess players, that's what they've really latched onto, was the characters and the story and the competitive aspect. And it has very little to actually do with the chess. It's just to do with competing and the people that you're seeing compete. And so you do want to be able to get attached to them.
Yeah, I think if I was going to make a chess TV show, I don't know, because I think chess players are really fascinating. I think they're very cool to be around, and they're just like a different kind of person that I haven't met before in my life before I got into the chess world. And so I would love to make, well, my whole thing is I would love to make a Drive to Survive style of, I don't know, have you seen Drive to Survive, Lula? Do you know what that is?
What is
so
that?
For those who don't know, Drive to Survive is the Netflix like accompaniment to the Formula One Motorsports World Championship. For the past 7 years, they've been following the top 20 like Formula One drivers around the world and capturing it, and then they put it into a Netflix TV show called Drive to Survive. And it's really cool because it's not just about the races, it's about like the drivers, the teams, the drama of it all. And I think it's what boosted really Formula One's popularity, because this is a bit of personal self-interest. Like about like 6-7 years ago, Formula One was acquired by a company called Liberty Media because viewership for Formula One was dying. No one was interested in it. Like, and they just didn't have like the widespread audience that it needed to like continue and be popular. And so they decided to do this like Drive to Survive series. So to make Formula One more accessible to a wider audience. And it was very successful. Like Formula One is very popular now. And I think for chess, obviously it's hard because when you're watching chess, it requires like a baseline level of like knowledge about how the pieces move. But I think in my brain, at least, I truly believe that there is a way to do it.
When I was watching with my friends, I did give them a mini chess lesson before on like how the rules work. And I think if you don't know that, then like you feel locked out of this world, because there is an accessibility problem in chess in general, in that people think it's very hard and that for those who don't know anything about like basic chess rules or strategy, like watching a chess game is impossible. Speaking as somebody who 5 years ago would not be able to look at a chess game and understand a single thing about what was going on, it feels very much like you're locked out of this world. And I mean, I think I agree. I think there's a way to do it. I think that like the negativity that the show's got basically was saying bring back the master game. And I think that this would honestly be the most terrible idea because the master game was a show.
Game
in the 70s and 80s on BBC where they literally just showed one like long grandmaster game, like, and then some commentary of the long grandmaster game. And of course the only people who are asking to bring this back are people who are already chess players, very dedicated chess players. They probably play tournaments, and if they don't play tournaments, they watch tournaments. And the thing is this would like never work because you want people to watch TV who are not chess players. And if you have like an hour-long show which only appeals to chess players, then you're going to get taken off the air so quickly. Like, it would be the biggest flop. Like, no one's going to watch. Your numbers would be so low. And like, so even though chess players might want that, like, they can find that on YouTube. Like, they can find that on Twitch, and they don't need television for that. And so I think that like what chess players don't realize is that not everything is for them. Like, not everything that's chess adjacent even is for them. I mean, a lot of people in chess didn't like the Queen's Gambit because they saw it as like some sensationalized version of chess. But you have to bear in mind that this is probably not made for you. It's probably made for the wider audience and the general public. And actually, it did inspire a lot of non-chess players to play chess. And this can only be a good thing. And I think that on obviously a smaller scale, we've already started to see this with the BBC show, is people are showing up to chess clubs. And I've heard this like firsthand from like people who are on the show and their chess clubs, and people have started showing up in higher numbers since watching Chess Masters The Endgame. And I think that this can only be a very, very good thing for chess. And it just shows that we need more chess adjacent media in the mainstream, which is not for chess players, but it's for people who can look at chess and think, wow, this actually doesn't suck. Because in the nicest way possible, if you're not a chess player and you're watching a Super Grandmaster game with commentary, you're going to think it sucks because you're not going to have any way to access this. You're going to feel completely locked out of that world. And so, of course, you're not going to want to play chess. You're going to be like, oh, it's way too hard. It's like such a waste of time. And so I think that actually the general public have like quite warmly received a lot of chess adjacent media, Queen's Gambit, Chess Masters, like all of this stuff. Even PogChamps brought in this non-chess audience. And so I think this is probably the best thing that could happen to chess.
I totally agree. And also too, what I've noticed in the chess world is chess players, especially I think older ones, are very averse to change. Like, they do not want anything to, you know, rock the boat when it comes to chess. They want everything to stay the same. But
so I don't think, true.
They don't realize that, like, ultimately it benefits them to have this wider audience, to bring more people into chess. And because in the end, it brings more money into chess, it brings more attention into chess. You have, I think, a wider, like, appreciation for the game. And you never know, like, who is out there who maybe, like, never knew about chess before, and they're really freaking good, and they are able to like excel and have this either hobby or maybe career. And there are just so many benefits to it, and I just think that chess players in general are just very change averse. So
yeah, there's a lot of gatekeeping, which would seem strange. Like, and the gatekeeping, like you said, often comes from people who have been playing for a long time, and they think it's their like best kept secret. They don't actually want to like have to compete with other people. They like their bubble. They like going to their chess club and having this like sense of like familiarity. And what they don't realize is that like chess will just stagnate and die because there won't be any money coming in. There won't be kids coming in. I mean, like in the UK, I can only speak about the UK because that's what I've seen. You have the Chess in Schools and Communities charity, which has been so good. Like, so many kids have started playing chess. And if you're gatekeeping chess, you have to bear in mind you're also gatekeeping it from, like, the next big talents, which is, like, what you're saying. And these big talents can come from anywhere. They can come from somebody watching a TV show. They don't have to come from learning the game at 3 years old. They can come from watching the Queen's Gambit. They can come from whatever. So I think that there's a lot of prejudice even within chess, which is kind of silly because obviously we think about people being prejudiced against chess, thinking it's boring or uninteresting or whatever. There's so much prejudice within chess about like certain types of players or like who could be a good player. Mm-hmm. And like, I think the only way to kind of get rid of this is to get new people in and to show like you have some amazing young talents playing chess. A lot of them are girls. You have Badana, you have Iman, like you have so many people that you would not have seen excelling in chess like 20 years ago just because they wouldn't have been either given the opportunity or the media wouldn't have cared about it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I really am excited for the change that the show is creating and the wonderful opportunity that you got like to be on this show. And What is next for the chess princess? Have you gotten any like fun opportunities from this yet?
Do you know what? There's only two episodes out. So I imagine that my, you know, clearly inevitable fame and fortune is still coming.
Absolutely.
No, I'm kidding. But like, I've been like working in the chess world for the past 4 years, if you can call like the first half of it just me being like in my room streaming as work. But like, I expect that not a lot will change. Maybe I'll get to do a couple more cool chess things in the UK. But like, there's some stuff that I discussed with people like last year before, like well before the show came out, before anyone knew I was on the show, that like could happen at some point. And maybe the show will like expedite things. Maybe it will have no effect at all. Honestly, I have no idea. I haven't seen any change yet, but I wasn't expecting something life-changing to happen to me. So I think that that's very good. And I think I've had a couple comments like, oh, wow, congrats on your fame. And it was just like, what do you mean? Like, I guess if you're on something like Married at First Sight, which is going to go viral because it's just men saying awful things, then yeah, maybe you'll get like some big social media following out of it. But at the end of the day, like this wasn't my expectation going on the show. I wanted to do the show because I want to promote chess. And I want, like, when I went on the show, I had no idea that there would be like a 50-50 gender split in our group, right? Like, I had no idea there was going to be three women and three men. And so I applied to do the show because I was like, I want there to be women on the show. And I can ensure that if I go on the show because I'm a woman. And I want like to fight for that space for women in chess. And I think like they put a clip of me saying this on the show. And then some random guy on Twitter said like, what is she talking about? Like, there's Judit Polgar. And I'm just like,
no.
Like, well done for, I think like him and this other guy in their little thread managed to name maybe three women in chess ever. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, yes, you've proved my point without realizing it. You can name like three women in chess. You can name like 60 men in chess at least, mm-hmm. probably. Yeah. And like, that's the point is, yes, we've got Judit Polgar. We've got Susan Polgar. We've got all of these amazing female chess players, but they are still such a tiny, tiny minority when we think about like the greatest players of all time or when we think about famous chess players. Women are this teeny, teeny, tiny percentage. And so I think we very much are still fighting for equality and fighting for a space in chess. And I know that we're going to talk about this more in depth in a future episode. So I will stop there with my, before I go on a rant about women in chess.
Yes, I do want to dedicate a whole future episode to specifically talking about women in chess. But just a reminder to our audience that women only make up about 11% of all chess players. So that sucks. We are very, it's not, the chess world is not a great space for women. That's all I'll say until our future episode. That's so great. I am looking forward to the future episodes for sure.
I just ranted for like 20 minutes.
No, it's okay. You're good. It's fine.
Why don't you tell us your spicy chess gossip of the week and I okay. will be quiet.
So my spicy chess gossip of the week, again, is Formula One related. Sorry, I'm in a bit of a Formula One
no, it's good.
Passion mode right now because this season just started up again. But my chess gossip of the week is that there was a picture of Charles Leclerc, who drives for Ferrari, and Lewis Hamilton, who also drives for Ferrari now, playing chess, and they have the chessboard set up wrong. It's really embarrassing.
Was it like turned or...
No, the queen was in the wrong place. They put the queen like they put the king like on his color and not the queen, if that makes
Oh,
any sense. And I was like,
thank you, patriarchy.
guys, come on.
Like, imagine putting the king on his collar. No.
No, right? That
That's
is
not for
so,
him.
it's not for him. It's for the girls. It's for the queens.
So, actually, what you mean to say, Amelia, is they were playing chess 960. They were playing freestyle chess.
Yeah, actually, they were playing freestyle chess.
Yeah,
Maybe
the
they
board
are
wasn't
into.
set up wrong.
No, it wasn't. They were just playing freestyle chess. But I bring this up as chess gossip this week because I'm a bit disappointed in Charles Leclerc. He apparently really loves chess and he plays all the time and like posts pictures of him playing all the time, which I do think it's kind of funny because he'll like post. Or he'll have like a photo shoot in his private jet of him like playing chess with his brother. And I'm just like, the level of wealth and like capitalistic kind of nonsense that's going on here is a bit dystopian, but.
Do you think that it's performative, like these chess pictures that he's taking and posting?
I don't know. I don't know if it's performative. I want to believe that he actually really likes to play chess. And for the literal like past 2 years that I have been into Formula One, I have been begging chess.com to do Formula One driver bots, like with the drivers at least that play chess. So that's Charles Leclerc, Lewis Hamilton, Carlos Sainz plays a lot of chess. He did a This is what I love about like chess in the media specifically. I think it's really funny, but also kind of weird when people who are very famous, like outside of chess, like play chess. So Carlos Sainz, who now drives for Williams, he did a interview with his, I think it's like his racing manager or whatever, and they were like playing chess while doing an interview, and I was like, this is so interesting. Like, I don't know how to feel about it. I don't know. Have you ever seen like celebrities that you know also play chess? And then you're kind of like, I don't know how to feel about this.
Yeah, I mean, most of the times I've seen it, it's been because like chess.com has quote tweeted something about the board being set up wrong. So I definitely have seen this. I know that Woody Harrelson actually does play chess, and I know that he's done visits with the Chess in Prisons program in the UK. So he's gone to do like simuls and play against prisoners, and this has been obviously really good. This is a really good rehabilitation program. But I know that he's definitely a chess player. And he also did like the ceremonial first move at one of the World Chess Championships, I think. And I think he did like the wrong move, I think.
About it is that I think what's weird about it is that they don't know like the inner workings of the chess world and they don't understand like how one, I mean this very kindly, like how weird it is, and two, like how we're kind of stuck in the 1960s in terms of like the fact that women have like such a low participation rate, there's a lot of misogyny in chess, and so they've feel very detached like from the world that I know of chess. And so for me I just always get this like weird feeling whenever I see like Charles Leclerc play chess because I'm like, you don't know what I know. And that is weird, but also we bond over this game. But I think it would, I don't know, on one hand, like I would love for I don't know if it would be positive for the chess world if like more celebrities maybe were like actively involved. Like Rainn Wilson when he did PogChamps, right?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Yeah, like
Yeah.
I think
And
that
so
was
did
so
the
fun.
mountain from Game of Thrones.
That's true. 'Cause Rainn Wilson was also in that Netflix like episode about how it works. I don't remember like what
For
the title of the
chess.
show. Yeah, there was like an episode about it's a similar like how it works episode. It's like what is chess?
Okay,
And he
that's
was
cool.
in like this Netflix episode about it, but Netflix seems to be really like picking up more chess stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Netflix has become a really huge producer and distributor anyway for a lot of stuff. But yeah, so there's a Netflix documentary on chess that's coming out soon. I read in a recent chess.com article. They even have like the title, sorry, I've forgotten it, but it must be coming out pretty soon. And then there's also the Emma Stone movie. Like Emma Stone is producing a film also about the Carlsen-Niemann drama. These are both about the same drama, the documentary and the film. So it'll be interesting to see two pieces of media covering the same thing in a very different way. But I think that, I mean, okay, Emma Stone is doing more for chess by making this film than like any of these celebrities who claim to actually play chess. And I think the problem is like, okay, a lot of people know how the pieces move. Like, a lot of people learn how the pieces move as children. And this is like just this piece of inherent knowledge that a lot of people have. And if you have seen people play chess, you know that knowing how the pieces move is not the same as knowing how to play chess. I'm sorry. It's not, because when I was a kid, I also knew how the pieces moved. Did I know how to set up a chessboard? No. Did I know what castling was? No. Did I know en passant? No. Did I know how to start a game? No. I did not know how to play chess. And so I think with a lot of celebrities, it just comes down to like seeing a fancy chessboard, wanting to buy it, wanting to put it in their mansion, and then having some like interviewer come over and be like, "Oh, you have a chessboard," and then be like, "Yeah, I love chess," and then that's it. I'm a chess player now, and it's just not it.
It's not the same.
It's not the same thing. That was like me having a driving license being like, yeah, I love doing Formula One. Like, wow, I love doing Formula
So
One because
true.
I know how to drive. They're just completely different things. They're not
Yeah.
even closely related.
That's so true.
But yeah, I think chess is very misunderstood.
I completely agree. I would love to see Charles Leclerc show up to Granka Chess, like with 2,000 other people. Be like on the lowest probably rated board, no offense, and just like compete in a chess tournament. This is my official
Yeah, with the rest
invitation.
of us.
Yo,
Yeah.
come join us down here.
Yeah, sitting like on the bottom board with the cracked pieces, with the chessboard that's curling at the edges. Because let's be honest, at like big tournaments, the lower the board goes, the worse your chess set is.
Exactly.
You haven't experienced this because you've only played on beautiful DGT sets, Amelia, but
Okay, true.
I can warn you against going to these huge tournaments and playing on these like really crappy boards. Not speaking about Granka because I've never been there, but usually this is the way, is that like the top boards get the nicest chess sets, which yeah, I get it. You want to give grandmasters the good sets, but I feel like everybody should be entitled to a good playing experience. I think that like the reality of playing chess as like a regular tournament player is not glamorous at all, and it's actually quite stressful, and the schedules can be really grueling, and you can be playing two or three games a day. I don't know. General audience's perception of chess is very warped, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Especially when you compare like in the US to Europe. In the US, if you go to like a tournament, a lot of the times you have to bring your own board, you have to bring your own clock. It's
That's insane.
very, very different because like in Europe, they, provide boards, provide clocks typically. And so moving abroad here and seeing, well, to be honest, I never competed in a chess tournament in the US. I did like I was a part of my chess club in uni very briefly, but it was still the same. Like I had to bring my own board, I had to bring my own clock. But moving here, I definitely think the chess experience is a little bit superior.
Yeah, I
And
agree.
so, yeah, I don't know what you think about that and moving abroad because I know that you moved from Jersey to Paris and like what maybe that experience was like chess-wise, but also in your personal life.
No, I mean, moving definitely changed my relationship with chess because back in Jersey, for a lot of the time I was playing, I used to go to my local chess club. And then, I mean, I stopped going, but I went for a while. And then since moving to Paris, I haven't joined a chess club, partially because joining a chess club as a woman is quite a daunting experience. You know that going, you're going to be a minority. And I think that the only reason I was able to do it the first time is because I was still so naive about everything. Like, I had never played a chess tournament before. I'd never been to a chess club before. I'd only been playing chess for like a year. And so when I went to my local chess club, I was just optimistic that there would be like young people there. I ended up being the only woman. I was the only woman, and I was like the only person under like 50. And like, not dissing anybody who's a man over 50, but like, as a, I was like a 22-year-old teenage girl at the time, I wanted to be playing chess against other 22-year-old girls. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that, with wanting to feel seen and represented in a community. And so knowing, I mean, in Paris, it's going to be different, right? I think there'll be a bunch of young people, but I think that I'll still be a tiny minority as a woman. And then the difference is here, I'm a foreigner. So I've been to a couple of chess events in Paris. I played the Paris Championship in 2023, which is like a big FIDE rated tournament. So that's kind of different. But going to a chess club here, I haven't done it because I will be like other, you know, I will be woman and foreigner. And I've tried this before at chess bars here, because there's a couple of chess bars that run these casual events. And the last one I went to, there was like only one other woman. And like, we talked very slightly. Honestly, I was quite nervous, and like, no hate to her, she was absolutely lovely. But like, the second thing she asked me was like, you're a foreigner, aren't you? Like, where are you from? And like, this is a reality of living. I don't know if it's a reality of living abroad, but it's a reality of living in France, is even if you're speaking their language, they are hyper aware of accents. There's obviously a lot of judgment based on accents. And I mean, it depends on who you're speaking to and if they even like your foreign accent, because some of them find it cute, but they do immediately identify you as other. And it, like, it's very, very frustrating, because I'm just trying to go to a chess club, and then it becomes like, oh, where do you come from? Why are you living here? Like, when did you move here? And actually, that's not a conversation I want to have every time I leave the house to do a social activity. So honestly, like, I mostly have foreign friends as well, like non-French friends. I have a couple of French friends who are fluent in English, and it doesn't bother them at all. But I don't know if you've felt this way living in Austria, where you have like this sense of being othered.
Yeah, I do, especially because when I moved to Austria in 2022, I actually did try to join a chess club. So a lot of chess happens in Vienna, like in these cafes, because cafe culture is super big here. And so a chess club will meet like once a week in a cafe. And there was one kind of down the street from the school that I went to that I wanted to join, or I had found it online and I was like, oh, maybe I can join this. And I went with my friend Pierce, who went to school with me. And he was also co-president of the chess club that we started like at our school. So he went with me to join the chess club, and it was so awkward. I was the only woman there, and all the guys like there looked at me like I was some creature out of like an alien book. Like, it was just so strange. And
yeah,
the guy who was like coaching the, it's like a club slash team, like the guy who was coaching the club like was very nice, and he spoke English, and it wasn't like really, there wasn't a language thing, because he kind of understood that everyone was coming from different places and didn't expect them to speak German. But it was very, I just like knew that it wasn't going to be a place where like I could make a friend like with these other guys. They didn't really like ask me any questions about myself, like, and I think in Austria it's a little bit different in that like Germans, they just like won't talk to you. Like, if they know that you're an other, they will just like exclude you or like pretend you don't exist. I hear this happen all the time in like university settings, especially when a program is maybe like, here we have a lot of hybrid programs that are in German and in English, and a lot of the times, because I'm in this group chat for international women in Austria, and the stories that I see in there of people being like, I'm in this hybrid program, and in the classes that are supposed to be in English, they just speak in German, even though like it's supposed to be in English, but they just assume that everyone is speaking German. And I don't know what to do, because like, I've brought it up, but I don't want people to like be mad at me for being different or wanting the class to be in English. And it's just like, it's so shitty. Like, I will say, I've never had any like mean experience. Like, no one has been like outwardly like mean to me. It's just more they pretend that you don't exist, and it feels really shitty, because it's like, I'm a person, and I deserve to be in this space as much as you do. I'm learning German. My German is not great, but I've been learning German for the past 2 years. It's a
I've
really
seen
hard
you speak
language.
German when I came to visit. You were speaking German.
Yeah, I can survive. Like, my German is good enough to where, like, I can survive. I can go to the grocery store, the post office, whatever. But even then, like, I think Austrians, in a way, like, appreciate the effort, but they're like, they immediately start speaking to you in English. I don't know if it's the same in France, but your French is really good. Like, you're
Thank
essentially like
you.
fluent.
I'm not fluent, but I do understand. Okay, so I understand to an almost fluent level where I'm like listening or reading. Like I can read very well. Like I will regularly go see movies in foreign languages with only French subtitles and I understand the whole thing and that's totally fine. But like there's a big confidence gap for me with speaking. And it partly comes from the fact that whenever I start to speak more and more, they will comment on the accent. And like, my accent's not bad. Like, it's really not
It's
bad at
not.
all. And like, okay, I'm gonna try and say this without sounding really conceited. If you're not French, if you're American, or if you're from the UK and you hear me speak French, you could probably think I'm like almost French, right? Because this has happened where I've been with other foreigners and they've been like, wow. But for French people, when they hear me speak French, I'm so distinctly not French. It's so clear. Like, it's so obvious that I'm not French. And that's totally fine because I'm not French and I'm not like pretending to be. But I am just trying to blend in and not like be making a spectacle out of myself just because I want to speak. And like, it gets to the point where even like if I am taking an Uber and the Uber driver asks me something, they'll be like, you have a tiny little accent there. Where are you from? And it's like, I don't want to have this conversation every single time. And like, I feel very privileged to be able to complain about this, obviously, because, you know, I've been able to move countries and I've been able to do this all legally and I've been able to pay for a visa and like all of this stuff. But like, these are still frustrations that you have of like living abroad and moving abroad. And I would agree that some people do not want to befriend foreigners. Like, this is true. I would say that like in general, most French people who have like reached out to me to like attend a chess event here, for example, that's happened a couple of times. Most of them assume I have zero understanding or knowledge of French and cannot understand a single thing. So, yeah, that's interesting. I've been here for almost 2 years, but yeah, I don't know. It's difficult and it does put me off going to things. Like it puts me off joining a chess club. It puts me off like any kind of like it puts me off going to like a Pilates class.
Well, I think what's funny about the French people is that, like, they hate speaking English. Like, they do not want to speak English. And so it's like, you literally, your French is great. Like, you can have a very almost fluent conversation. You understand it. And so it's like, you took the time to learn the language. The least they could do is, like, be a little respectful. Whereas, like, in Austria, they're like, you don't speak German, I'll speak in English. They don't even want to speak to you in their native language. But like the French people don't want to speak English at all. So I don't know what their problem is. I don't want to be a. Yeah.
I would say in Paris, it's a little bit different because I do get so many tourists. And I've even had occasions where I've been out with my boyfriend who is French. He's lived in Paris his entire life. And he has spoken to a waiter in French with his perfect French, where he has no accent because he's French. And they've replied in English just because they're so used to tourists and foreigners that they
Yeah.
seem to just default to it in certain settings. And the funny thing is like whenever people start talking to you back in English, it's not the ones who have great English. Like there are a lot of people in France, a lot of people in Paris who speak perfect fluent English. I've met some of them. And they're never the ones that make a point of speaking English because like I guess they understand like what it's like to learn two languages and speak them fluently. And like I don't understand what it's like to learn two languages and speak them fluently because I don't pretend to be fluent in French. But it's always the people who don't speak great English that insist on replying in English.
Yeah,
Like
yeah. I think it's just frustrating in general. Like, I moved to Austria 2 years ago and in 2022. And oh, 3 years ago. Okay.
wow.
I know. I moved here 3 years ago and it honestly has been so not only like transformative, but I feel I just want to say, I know I'm very privileged and that I am so grateful, especially in this current international geopolitical climate, that I do get to live abroad.
And
But
not in
it's
the US
still, and not in the US, but it's
specifically.
still very, very hard. Like, it is the visa process of applying and getting all of your papers together and proving to the government that, like, you legally are allowed to be here. Because, like, in Austria, I'm here on a student visa, which I'm very thankful for. Thank you, MA35, for allowing me to live here. But the process is really difficult. Making friends is hard. I didn't know a single person when I moved to Austria. I'd never been here before, and I wanted, like, a new experience living somewhere that where no one knew me and I could just kind of, in a way, start over. That is very hard, making friends. And honestly, the first year, like after the my first year of my master's program, I was like, I hate living here. I'm gonna leave. Like, I
I
ended up
remember
apply
this.
yeah, I ended up
Wow.
applying. I was gonna move to Norway, actually, fun fact. I applied to the University of Oslo to do a history master's program because I wasn't loving my international relations program because I beef with political scientists. But I got accepted to the University of Oslo, and but the thing about it was the first year that they were going to start charging international students tuition, and I had already paid out of pocket for like 1 year of my master's program, and it didn't make any sense, I think, financially to go and pay, which the only reason I was able to pay out of pocket anyway is because I was very lucky and I got a scholarship to uni. So all that money that I was going to pay for uni, I used it for my master's and to live in Europe. And so I ended up just staying and writing it out and finishing my second year because I was like, why am I going to start over and pay another, 30,000 euros? In Norway is a much more expensive place to live in. And so I stayed here and I pushed it through, but that's such a hard thing to, like, I think, admit that maybe, I don't know. Looking back on it now, I'm glad I stayed because then my life would not look the way it is. And, I ended up meeting my partner and I have really great friends and that I love and that I would never, like, want to be away from who live here in Austria with me. But it's still, I think those first 2 years is super hard and feeling like an other always is very hard and you never know, like, when your next visa is going to come and it's very complicated. Well, I think this has been such a, honestly, I've really enjoyed this podcast episode. I think this has been my favorite one so far. I've loved talking about your new TV show on the BBC. I know it's not your TV show, but it's the Chess Masters Endgame on BBC Two, airing on Monday nights. Is that
Monday
correct?
nights at 8 p.m.
Perfect.
GMT.
GMT. And also, too, I think we had a really good conversation about, the current state of chess and celebrities in chess and what it's like to move abroad in your 20s. I know that was a bit of a pivot for the content of our podcast, but we do want this podcast to not only be about chess. So I love yapping with you about other things. So,
I love yapping with you too.
love you.
Love you. Cool. Well, I will see you soon for episode 4, Amelia. I hope you all enjoyed watching or listening, depending on if you're watching with video, because as a reminder, this is also a video pod. Please follow us and like if you haven't already, and we will see you in the next episode.
Bye, guys.
Bye.